The following is a presentation of Remnant. Light of the
world. Hey, this is Jeremiah from Remnant Church. Thanks for listening to us online. You know, we want you to be encouraged and filled with hope through your experience as you listen in. This life can be complicated, even confusing, but it's our hope that you catch a glimpse of God's unconditional love for you and His purpose for your life. Thanks for listening in.
You're listening to a message from Pastor Jeremiah Vick.
And excited about speaking this morning. It seems like we've been gone for, oh, I guess we only missed 1 week. I miss you guys so much. That's it. It felt like it was forever. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. And I'm excited about this because this has been good so far. Have you enjoyed our series so far? You know, when we first talked about what it would be like to kind of talk about these heroes, these characters, these real people in the Bible that we, you know, some of us were unfamiliar with their stories, and we hope that you've been getting a little more familiar. But we encourage you not to just hear what we say on Sunday morning, but we encourage you to check it out, to actually go to God's Word and get a little more detail, a little bit more of the story. Sometimes we'll just take an event out of the life of someone, and we'll just talk about that specific event. And it may be something that you've heard about before, but very possibly there could be a lot more to that story that you don't know about, and God may have something for you in that. So we invite you guys to use your Bibles and to dig in, not just on Sundays, and maybe research a little more. As a matter of fact, today I'm going to be talking about one of probably a Bible character you guys are pretty familiar with, but we're just highlighting certain parts of his life. And so my hope is that maybe you'll go home and you'll read this book and actually allow God to speak through his word to you. There's nothing like spending time in private with God, just you and him, and allowing him to speak to you. That is amazing to be able to do that. And so if you've never experienced that before, just one-on-one time with God where he speaks to you, I encourage you to do that. That's the Christian life is so empty without that. And so we challenge you guys to do that. So we are continuing our hero series this morning. And what I want to do this morning is maybe something a little bit different than what we've done with the other heroes that we've talked about. So we have our timeline here. And we're going to be talking about, here's the thing. What we're going to actually do is take some screenshots, kind of some snapshots from this Bible character's life. So we're going to be talking about Joseph this morning. And so Joseph is obviously, I mean, Joshua, sorry, he's obviously after Moses, okay? So you've had Adam and Eve, Noah, Abraham, Jacob, Joseph, Moses, and then you come to Joshua. And then after Joshua, you have some more heroes because the reign of the kings begins. Starts with Saul and then continues on with David and a whole bunch of other stuff happens. So right before all of that happens in Israel, you have this guy, Joshua. And Joshua is a really cool guy because he actually is a warrior. This guy's a fighter. And so if you read the book of Joshua, you're going to be reading about fight after fight and about situation after situation where this guy is challenged as a warrior. And that's one of the reasons I love talking about Joshua, because this guy is not one of those guys that just gives directions. I mean, this is a guy that who's actually down there on the battlefield kicking some tail. Yeah, that was what I was going to say. I don't know why I paused at all. That was weird. Okay, so anyway, so Joshua. And so I'm actually naming this message that I want to share with you this morning, Strong and Courageous. And I get those words from a pep talk that God gives Joshua. Okay, so if you've ever played sports or been involved in, or maybe even PE, coaches might do this, but if you ever had a coach give a rousing speech to the team, okay, a pep talk, a challenge to them, and it kind of gets them excited and pumped about the game or about practice or whatever it is the coach wants them to be excited about. So this is what's happening here. You have God who's delivering to Joshua, it's actually a commission, okay? So he's commissioning Joshua to do something, and while he's doing that, he is really pumping him up. He's giving him this pep talk. And so We're going to start out by reading the pep talk that God gives Joshua. And then from there, we're going to just take snapshots of Joshua's life. And we're going to talk about how this pep talk inspired these different points in his life. Does that sound cool? Okay, so we'll see God's promises from this talk fulfilled in actual events in Joshua's life. Okay, it's going to be good. All right, cool. Let's read the passage and then we'll pray and jump into it. We're in Joshua 1. We'll be reading verses 1 through 9. And I encourage you, as Jerry did, I encourage you to tag our message on social media. I encourage you to do that. I encourage you to write things down. If you have a pen, hopefully you have a pen. If you don't, there's pens in the back. If you have your bulletin, there's a space there for you to write notes down. I think that's important because it helps us remember the things that God showed us. So let's read Joshua 1, 1 through 9. It says this: after the death of Moses, the Lord's servant, the Lord spoke to Joshua, son of Nun, Moses' assistant. I want to stop right there because I was kind of bummed out when I was reading, and I'm like, here Joshua described as Moses' assistant. I'm like, this sounds like a guy who has an office job. Okay, but it's far from that, far from that, okay? I mean, I thought the word sidekick, and that doesn't even cover what Joshua does. Because when I think of sidekick, I think of like, you know, Robin, Batman sidekick, and I'm not always impressed with Robin, okay? So Joshua, for some reason, I feel like this title of assistant just is underwhelming to me. So let's continue on. We'll get to hear some more great things about him. He said to Joshua, Moses, my servant, is dead. Therefore, the time has come for you to lead these people, the Israelites, across the Jordan River into the land that I'm giving them. So God actually alludes to something that Joshua's probably been thinking about for a long time, okay? Because the entire time that the Israelites are wandering in the wilderness, and if you know the story, Moses leads his people out of Egypt, okay? God performs some pretty amazing miracles in order for that to happen. And they're wandering through in the wilderness. And God's promise is the reason they're there is because he's going to take them to a land that he's giving to them, the promised land, okay? And this land is going to be Israel's land. And God is saying, I'm giving it to you and no one else can take it away from you, okay? So it's going to be yours forever. So pretty exciting stuff that Joshua's being invited to do here. Then he says in verse 3, I promise you what I promised Moses. Wherever you set foot, you will be on land I have given you. From the Negev wilderness in the south to the Lebanon mountains in the north, from the Euphrates River in the east to the Mediterranean Sea in the west, including all the land of the Hittites. No one will be able to stand against you as long as you live. That's a pretty big deal. Man, has your coach ever said something that rousing to you right before a game? Yeah, probably not. Not me, anyway. For I will be with you as I was with Moses. I will not fail you or abandon you. I can just imagine, right, at this point, when God says to Joshua, I'm going to be with you in the same way that I was with Moses, I think Joshua probably had like all these flashbacks. And he's picturing in his mind ways that God was with Moses. And probably the earliest memory he has is where God is parting the Red Sea so that the Israelites can be in safety. And then, to me, the greatest thing is not necessarily that the Israelites were able to cross in safety, but that Pharaoh's entire army is drowned as God causes the sea to close back up on them. And I imagine that at that moment, Joshua's thinking about that. He's probably thinking about the time when the people were hungry and they were asking God for food. And under Moses' leadership, God says, I'm going to make bread fall from heaven. Okay? Now, some of my favorite restaurants that have really good bread, really good breadsticks, okay? It's like I'm tempted at times to go there and just order water. You know what I mean? Just eat the bread. And so to me, that sounds pretty heavenly. Bread, and it's actually coming from heaven. And I'm sure that Joshua's thinking of that. I'm pretty sure also that Joshua's thinking of the time when the people were thirsty And Moses, God tells Moses to strike a rock. And he, well, I think he was supposed to actually speak to the rock. And Moses decides he hits it instead. But regardless, water comes gushing out. And the Israelites are able to drink. What are some other things that probably came to his mind? Probably that pillar of fire at night and that cloud, that pillar of clouds during the day that led the people. I mean, all these things, and God is promising Joshua, hey, I'm going to be with you in the same way that I was with Moses. Then he says this, be strong and courageous, for you are the one who will lead these people to possess all the land I swore to their ancestors that I would give them. So this is an even bigger deal. God's saying, you, Joshua, are going to be the dude that leads these people into that promised land. The land that everybody's been talking about as they've been wandering in the wilderness, you're going to be the guy that leads them into that place. Then he says, be strong and very courageous. Be careful to obey all the instructions Moses gave you. Do not deviate from them, turning either to the right or to the left. Then you will be successful in everything you do. Study this book of instruction continually. Meditate on it day and night, so you will be sure to obey everything that's written in it. Only then will you prosper and succeed in all you do. By the way, I believe with all my heart, God is referencing his direct word to Joshua. And when he says, spend time in this bad boy, and you will be successful in all that you do. I think that's a promise that we can claim today. If we are obedient to God in that fashion, I believe that God, and when I say success, I'm not saying you're going to get everything that you want. Because success in God's eyes is a lot different than success in our eyes. Am I right? It looks a lot different. But it has much, much greater reward in eternity. Verse 9, this is my command. Be strong and courageous. Are you starting to see where I got the title from? Yeah. Do not be afraid or discouraged, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. Father, I just would pray this morning that as we, having read this inspirational pep talk that you gave Joshua right before you commissioned him to lead your people, I pray, Father, that we would be able to draw out of this the characteristics that you want to see in our lives. If we're going to live heroic lives, if we're going to live lives that stand above the crowd, if we're going to live lives that follow hard after you, I pray that you would help us to take these principles and apply them to our lives, God. It wouldn't just be something we hear, Father, but it would be something that we do. And I pray that as we look at these snapshots of Joshua's life, I pray, Father, that you would just remind us of our own lives, the situations that you have placed us in, that you have created us for, and that you have ordained in this time for us to be in. And I pray, Father, that we would be able to take the same heroic response that Joshua has and apply it to our situation. God, help us to do that. Help us to see that this morning. And above all, I pray, Father, as I speak this morning, that my words would be your words. Thank you. It's in your son's name we pray. Amen. All right, so as I said, I'm going to take a couple of phrases, a couple of key things that God points out to Joshua, and then we're going to look at some snapshots in his life. And I want you to notice in verse 5, he says, for I will be with you as I was with Moses. I will not fail you or abandon you. Okay? We already talked about how this must have fallen on Joshua's ears when he hears these words, that I'm going to be with you in the same way that I'm with Moses. And I think that Joshua already was starting to show some characteristics of a hero. What do I mean by that? Because the first thing I want you to write down, or that I want you to remember, take with you, is that a hero is mindful of God's presence. A hero is mindful of God's presence. Okay, so if we do a little bit of backstory here, Joshua was one of 12 guys that were sent into this land that God promised as spies, okay? So Moses sends out his 12 best guys into this land to check it out and to see what kind of plan they could come up, what the strategy might be for taking over this land that God's given them. See, it wasn't like God had this promised land for them, and it was just this beautiful place that was unoccupied and with a welcome sign. You know, giant vacancy sign blinking. Come on in, guys. That's not the way it is. And that's not the way it is in life. Am I right? As a matter of fact, the situations that God is calling us into, the area in our lives that God wants us to claim victory over, those are not necessarily easy places for us to enter. Those are not going to be places where we can just walk in and kind of have our way. No, there's going to be challenges. Things are going to happen, and we're going to be discouraged along the way. We're going to be challenged as we step into the places that God is inviting us to go. And so Moses sends out these 12 spies, and after they've had a chance to check out the land, they come back and they give the report. So Moses is like, okay, guys, what did you see while you were there? And so one after the other, they begin to lay out their report, and they're like, man, the people that live there are so big. They're so mean. The cities are so fortified. I mean, it's just report after report of all this bad news, these reasons why this is going to be a terrible idea to enter into this land. But there's two guys out of those 12 that have the opposite news, okay? And it's Joshua and a guy named Caleb, okay? And check out what they have to say about the land. Okay, Caleb speaks up first in Numbers 13, verse 30. He says, let's go at once and take the land. We can certainly conquer it. Okay, so Caleb's just like, don't even listen to these dudes. Let's go. He's like, we can do that. We can do this now. You want to go now? Let's go right now. Let's do it. Okay? And then in Numbers 14, verses 8 through 9, here's Joshua's response. And here's what Joshua has to say about the land. By the way, when Joshua and Caleb give a good report, the people are so shocked and frightened by the report of all the other 10 guys that they actually decide that because Joshua and Caleb are giving good news, that they actually want to kick them out. Actually, worse than that, they're like, let's stone Joshua and Caleb because they're giving a good report. Has that ever happened to you before? I mean, you know, everybody has this negative attitude, and you're like, well, you know, it's not as bad as you think, and you're the one with the positive attitude, and everybody's like giving you that, you know, that they're mad dogging you, giving you that face like, you know, what are you talking about? I can just imagine how Joshua and Caleb feel in this circumstance. People are looking down on them, and they even, I mean, this is bad. They even say, let's kill them, okay? They're bringing good news, and we want to hear bad news. Let's kill them, okay? Check out what Joshua says in response to this. He says in Numbers 14, 8 through 9, if the Lord is pleased with us, he will bring us safely into that land and give it to us. Then he goes on to say, it's a rich land flowing with milk and honey. Do not rebel against the Lord. Don't be afraid of the people of the land. They are only helpless prey to us. They have no protection, but the Lord is with us. Don't be afraid of them. So Joshua's like, no way, guys, this place is amazing, and these guys do not stand a chance. And it's not because we're good fighters. You know, think about the Israelites and who they were. I mean, they were people that were in captivity. Then they were people that were wandering around in circles in the desert. These aren't exactly battle-worthy people, okay? These aren't exactly people that are up to going to war. But Joshua doesn't pay attention to their status. He doesn't pay attention to the enemy, the foreboding enemy. Instead, he says, God is with us. And he says, if God is with us, we can take them on. We've got this. See, here's the thing. We need to move forward in God's plan for us, fully aware of and with confidence in his presence. Now, I don't know about you, but sometimes I look at the situation that I'm facing and I feel a little bit overwhelmed. I feel like it's a little bit more than I can handle. But then I'm reminded that if God is with me, I can move forward in confidence, fully aware of his presence, knowing that he's going to bring victory. And so I encourage you, I don't know what situation you're facing. I don't know what sort of challenge is in your life right now. But maybe right now, you're actually thinking of this situation. And I want to be real with you. I want to first of all say, that if you're going into that situation by yourself, I think you're going to be like those other 10 guys that went in and they're like, oh man, this is bad news. It's time to bail. But if you go in with God, if you say, God, I am fully aware of and I'm confident of your presence in this situation, I guarantee you that God is going to take you through whatever it is you're facing. And this is exactly what Joshua discovers. So a hero is mindful of God's presence. So what else does God tell Joshua here in this little pep talk that he gives him? Look in verse 2, he says, the time has come for you to lead these people. He says, Joshua, you are the man. The time has come and it's now your responsibility. It's your time to lead these people. But I love what Joshua does when it comes to leadership. See, Joshua wasn't the kind of leader, as I said before, that stood in one place or sat in an office and gave directions. Joshua's a guy that was constantly pointing the people towards God, constantly reminding them of God's promises, and constantly saying, look, God's the one leading the way. I'm just following. And that's the next thing I want you to know, that thing I want you to write down or keep with you, is that a hero leads others towards God. A hero leads others towards God. Look what happens in Joshua chapter 3, verses 7 through 11. This is like Joshua's first major opportunity to provide leadership for his people. The Lord told Joshua, today I will begin to make you a great leader in the eyes of all the Israelites. They will know that I'm with you, just as I was with Moses. Give this command to the priests who carry the Ark of the Covenant. When you reach the banks of the Jordan River, take a few steps into the river and stop there. So Joshua told the Israelites, come and listen to what the Lord your God says. Today you will know that the living God is among you. He will surely drive out the Canaanites, Hittites, Hivites, Perizzites, Girgashites, Amorites, and Jebusites ahead of you. Look, the Ark of the Covenant, which belongs to the Lord of the whole earth, will lead you across the Jordan River. Okay, so I want you to notice something about what Joshua's saying here. He's saying, okay, listen up to what God's saying. God is telling us to cross the river. And then he says, not only that, but God's telling us to put the Ark of the Covenant, which fully represents God's presence, right out in front. And so he says, God is literally leading us across this river. And if you don't know the story, I'm going to summarize. I'm not going to read it because it's kind of long, but I want you to know what happens when they step foot into the Jordan River with the Ark of the Covenant leading them. God separates the waters. And just like God split the Red Sea open for Moses, God splits the Jordan River open so that Joshua's crew can cross the Jordan River. Once again, I mean, and you may think to yourself, okay, well, it's not the Red Sea. Come on. You know, it's just a small miracle. But I mean, think about the fact that God has assigned Joshua to lead his people. And so the significance of crossing this Jordan River is not just that these guys are not getting their feet wet. That's not what's significant about this crossing. The significance is that the Jordan River stood between them and the Promised Land. And they're standing on the banks of the Jordan River, and they're like, that's a lot of water for us to cross till we get to the place that God's promised us. And maybe you're standing in a place in your life and you're looking across to where you know God wants you to be. You're looking across to that place where you know God has a plan for you. And you're like, there's a lot of water between me and that place. But if you step into that water, if you take a step in the direction toward God is calling you, and you do it with his presence leading you, God is going to part those waters. And he's going to bring you through to safety. So this wasn't just about a miracle that got them to the other side. This was about God saying, I'm finally delivering on my promise of taking you into the promised land. And I love how Joshua approaches this situation. And during the whole time, he says, God is the one leading us. You can see it. It's obvious as anything. I'm not the first one in the water. Who's the first one in the water? The presence of God. God's going ahead of us and he's leading us. And that's why I say we're not called to draw attention to ourselves. but to point others to God so that they might be led by him. See, being a leader, being a hero is not about, not so much about leading others as it is about being this incredible example of what it means to follow after God. So we can be more than just leaders or good leaders or great leaders. We can be great followers of Jesus. And I believe that's what Joshua was. He was a great follower of Jesus, and that's why he led the people so well. What else does God have to say in this pep talk for Joshua? He says in verse 7, he says, "Be careful to obey all the instruction that Moses gave you." So he says, hey, remember those laws? Remember those things that Moses laid out that were supposed to not only protect you as the people of God, but also were supposed to symbolize me, symbolize that the God of the nations was in charge of these people. All those things, I want you to keep those things. I want you to keep those promises. I want you to obey those guidelines, because those are the things that set you apart from the other nations. Those are the things that make you uniquely God's. And you know what? It's so interesting to me is that so many of us, when we begin a relationship with Jesus, we're excited about embarking on this journey with him. But we get a little ways down the road and we feel pretty comfortable taking on some of those things that we got rid of, some of those characteristics, some of those things that made us kind of blend in with the crowd. And when God says, strip those things away, I want you to stand out from the crowd. I want you to be different. We're comfortable layering those things back on so that we look like those around us. And the truth is, and I'm not talking about fashion, okay? Well, I might be talking about fashion a little bit. But the truth is that there are a lot of things that we do that is characteristic of the world. And we refuse at times to fully represent who God has made us to be in front of the people that we live with, the people that we work with, the people that we communicate with. And God is saying to Joshua, I want you to be very careful to follow the instructions, because these instructions set you apart from a world that's opposed to God. And I believe God's telling us the same thing. That's why I can say this, and you can write this one down. A hero is obedient in impossible circumstances. A hero is obedient in impossible circumstances. We're going to talk a lot about impossible and possible circumstances, but for right now, it's a lot easier to be obedient in possible circumstances than it is in the impossible. And I love this story that illustrates that so well. Let's look at Joshua chapter 6. Joshua chapter 6. So one of the first things, one of the first challenges, the first major issues that face the people of Israel as they enter into this promised land is they've got to take out some people that are already living there. They've got to get rid of, they've got to go to battle against these people that are not only taking up the space that God's given them, but they're also people that are opposed to God and all that he stands for. So Joshua 6, 1 through 5 reads, "Now the gates of Jericho were tightly shut because the people were afraid of the Israelites." I love this because I think that the Israelites are coming up on the city Jericho and they're like, whoa, look at this city. It's huge. This wall, check this out. The wall around Jericho, they say, was so fortified. It was so wide, they used to have chariot races on top of the wall around the city. So we're talking about a city that is surrounded by a NASCAR track, okay, that is like incredibly elevated above their heads. And they're like, how are we going to get through this? I mean, this wall is massive. They're like, it would take us another 40 years just to get through this wall. And I love the fact that this verse says the people of Jericho were a little bit worried about this. I'm pretty sure some rumors were getting around. I mean, maybe Joshua and the Israelites were not the only ones that saw the Jordan River part. Maybe they're like, you know, there's a little more going on here. Maybe they heard about the other battles that the people of Israel were involved in on their way to conquer this land, and they're like, you know what? I think we got something to worry about. But we got a big bad wall, and so we're buttoning this place down tight. It says, no one was allowed to go out or in. But the Lord said to Joshua, I have given you Jericho, its kings, and all its strong warriors. You and your fighting men should march around the town once a day for 6 days. 7 priests will walk ahead of the ark, each carrying a ram's horn. On the 7th day, you are to march around the town 7 times with the priest blowing the horns. When you hear the priest give one long blast of the ram's horns, have all the people shout as loud as they can. Then the walls of the town will collapse and the people can charge straight into the town. And then it happens exactly the way God describes it. You can read the story for yourself. And the wording is exactly the same. That's why we're not reading it again. But the truth is, and I could just imagine being one of these guys in this army that has to march around the city. And I'm pretty sure that after the 3rd or 4th time around the city, they're like, is he for reals? I mean, do we have to keep doing this? What is this all about? It's like these guys take chariots around this city because it's so big. And here we are on foot walking around. How many of you guys participated in the 5K again? Yeah. How'd you like to do that 7 times? And then on the 7th day, do it 7 more times. Yeah, so these guys are like, man, this is not the best strategy because not only are we having to walk a lot, and I don't really see anything happening that's spectacular because of this little journey we're taking, but we're also going to be a little bit tired when it comes to actually going in to take over the city. Well, what happens? They do exactly what God tells them to do. They're obedient in impossible circumstances. Sometimes in your life, God is going to ask you to do something that may sound ridiculous. It may sound opposed to everything you think is the right step to take. It's not going to be contrary to God's word, but it's definitely going to take you out of your comfort zone. And God is saying, I want you to follow my directions. I want you to follow my instructions. And then see how I make these walls fall down. And this is exactly what happens in this situation. That's why I say spiritual victory comes as a direct result of our obedience to God. Spiritual victory comes as a direct result of our obedience to God. And I dare say that spiritual victory doesn't come any other way. It's only through our obedience to God that we're going to have victory in this life. God is the one that provides the victory, and he also provides the way for us to get there. And if we need a reminder at all to the passage we've talked about before in 1 Samuel 15:22, when Saul, the first king, doesn't follow God's instructions and he tries to butter up the situation by making an offering to God, Samuel tells him, obedience is better than sacrifice, and submission is better than offering. And that's why I say to you, when we come here on a Sunday morning, it's better that we live a life or live an entire week of obedience to God rather than just give him one Sunday with our hands raised in praise to him. Because that sacrifice, that offering that we give to God on a Sunday morning here in this room doesn't compare to a week-long act of obedience to him. If we're not obeying God during the week, we might as well not even come and worship him on a Sunday. Because it's not a big deal to God. As a matter of fact, in other places in the Bible, God actually says, I hate your worship. He says, I hate the noise that you make. It stinks. And he's not talking about the way you sing. Well, some of you, he might be. But the point is, God is saying, your worship is not doing it for me. Because your life is not lived in obedience to me. Okay? So if we're going to worship God on a Sunday, that means that on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday morning before church, ooh, that's a big one. All those other times during the week have to be lived in obedience to God if we're going to worship him on Sunday. Let's take a look at this last snapshot, or this last this last piece that God gives Joshua, and then we'll look at the snapshot in his life. Verse 8, Joshua 1:8. He says, "Then you will prosper and succeed in all you do." Then you will prosper and succeed in all you do. So I'm looking at this verse, this challenge, or this promise that God gives Joshua, and I say to myself, what makes God able to tell Joshua, you're going to be successful in everything that you do? I mean, what is it that Joshua has that enables God to make this kind of a claim? I mean, that's a pretty big claim. If someone told me, aside from a fortune cookie at a Chinese restaurant, if someone told me I was going to be successful in everything I do, I don't know that I would believe them. I would say, you know what? I've been unsuccessful at times in my life. I've failed. I've screwed up. And when you tell me I'm going to be successful in everything I do, I just don't know about that. I don't know if I have enough faith to believe that. And all of a sudden I realize what it was that Joshua had that made this claim true. Joshua had this incredible faith. He had this incredible trust in God. And this is why I say a hero practices audacious faith. A hero practices audacious faith. And audacious is kind of a big word, so we defined it here for you. Audacious means extremely bold or daring, recklessly brave, fearless, in defiance of convention. So a faith that is outside what's considered normal. So you may have this strong faith, and people may look at your life and say, wow, you have a lot of faith. And God is saying, well, that's just normal faith. I'm asking you to have audacious faith. I'm asking you to have a faith that goes above and beyond conventional faith. And I believe that's what Joshua had. And I can prove it. Joshua 10, verses 12 through 14. Check this out. On the day the Lord gave the Israelites victory over the Amorites, Joshua prayed to the Lord in front of all the people of Israel. He said, "Let the sun stand still over Gibeon and the moon over the valley of Ajalon." Verse 13. So the sun stood still and the moon stayed in place until the nation of Israel had defeated its enemies. Now, this, the first time I read this, I'm like, wow, that's cool. I'm like, wait a second. That's more than just cool. That's impossible. How does it happen? So, okay, there's this epic battle that's raging on, right? And God's saying, I'm going to give you victory this day. And Joshua's looking at his watch. And he's saying, the day's coming to an end. If God's going to give us victory in this day, I'm going to need a little more time. And so he prays his prayer and he says, God, may the sun stand still. In other words, extend this day so that I can get the job done. I've prayed that prayer a lot. I've sat in my office at my desk and I've said, I do not have enough time to get everything done that I need to get done today. And I'm like, God, you did this for Joshua. Like, my schedule's so important, right? Just extend it. Or sometimes I'm like, God, just add an extra day of the week. It's like, we'll just call it extra day. It's like Thursday, Friday, extra day, Saturday. I don't know. I could use an extra day every once in a while. The difference is God answers Joshua's prayer. Check this out. It says, is this event not recorded in the book of Jasher? Okay, so he makes reference to a historical book that was written, not the Bible, a different book that was there around recording events and things that were happening, okay? There's a lot of stuff in it. But one of the things that's very notable is that the author of Joshua, who we don't actually think is Joshua because he talks a lot about the past and how it's still happening today, but he points out that this event, this miracle that took place, was actually recorded in another place in history. Okay? The sun stayed in the middle of the sky, and it did not set as on a normal day. Verse 14. There has never been a day like this one before or since when the Lord answered such a prayer. Surely the Lord fought for Israel on that day. Pretty amazing stuff, right? Okay, so skeptics throughout the centuries have read about this. And I want you to think about this because most of the miracles that God performed for his people were pretty localized. Okay? Parting of the Red Sea, I mean, that's a huge miracle, right? But I mean, it's really going to only affect the Middle East, right? Just that area. Okay, if that happens. But the sun standing still, that's not going to just affect the people in that valley where that battle was going on, but that's going to have effects worldwide, wouldn't you think? And so skeptics are looking at this miracle, and they're saying, no. No, that's impossible, because if it was possible, there would be other recordings in history, other stories of this event. Okay, well, history goes to show that during the time of Joshua, Chinese Emperor Yao declared under his reign the sun stood still for so long above the horizon, they were afraid the world would be set on fire. Okay? The Babylonians and the Persians recorded an account of a day that was twice its normal length. The Roman writer Seneca wrote about the sun reversing its course and blotting out the night. Herodotus, the Greek historian, was shown by an Egyptian priest an ancient manuscript told of a story of a day twice as long as a normal day. Some Egyptian hieroglyphics that were translated by Fernand Combet mentioned the sun, thrown into confusion, remained low on the horizon, and by not rising, had spread terror amongst the great doctors. Pretty cool. Folklore, history, and other places where this event was recorded. So I'm thinking if in one part of the world, the one half of the world, they're talking about this incredibly long day, what's happening on the other half of the world? And so during the same time, the time of Joshua, the Quiche Mayans of Guatemala speak of a long night. They remain standing, and great was the anxiety in their hearts and stomachs as they wait for the coming of the dawn and the day. The Aztecs of Mexico and the Incas of Peru record that both the sun and the moon stood still before sunrise. The American Indians, the Omaha tribe, have a tale of the sun being caught in a rabbit's trap and finally released before dawn. The Bunji Indians from Lake Winnipeg area in Canada, they also talk about a long night. The Fiji and Hawaiian Islands have accounts of a long sunset where the sun refused to go down. So, folklore, legend, some of the stuff, actual historical events that were recorded. Check out this little map here. So if we plot all the places where this stuff was being talked about, those dark circles represent night in some places in the world, and the white ones represent day. And then the ones that are half dark, half light, those represent either a long sunrise or a long sunset. Okay, so just from secular history and from legends, we have all these stories about this incredibly long night and this incredibly long day, this long sunrise, this long sunset. So my question to you is, do I need to know all this in order to believe that that happened? No. See, because skeptics still say that even though there's all these legends, there's all these stories, they're like, no, it's still impossible. Because can you imagine the catastrophic events that would take place on Earth if the Earth stopped rotating? I mean, the continents would be flooded, right? I mean, things would be thrown into chaos if the Earth stopped rotating. Catastrophic events would happen. And so skeptics say, no, it's impossible. Absolutely impossible. And I agree with them. I think it's absolutely impossible. But God does the impossible. God does the impossible. And so to us, what is completely impossible, to God, is very possible. Because he's a God of miracles. That's the definition of a miracle. Something impossible became possible. And that's a miracle. And so I don't need to know all this history and legend in order for me to believe that God did this. Because if we have audacious faith in God, we can believe that this actually took place. Is it possible? No. It's impossible. But God does the impossible. You know what our job is? Our job is to do the possible and let God do the impossible. See, that's what God's all about. God's all about doing the impossible. Is it possible for your marriage to be repaired? Not if you're in control of that. Not if it's your job. But if it's God's job, God can do the impossible. Is it possible for healing to take place in someone's life who's sick? And I'm sure you're thinking of someone right now that needs healing. Is it possible? No, it's impossible. But God does the impossible. And that's why it can happen. They're miracles. God is not given up on doing miracles. Miracles are not exclusive to the Old and New Testament. Even to this day, God is continuing to do miraculous things. And that's why I say this. We can have an audacious faith because our confidence is in a God without limitations. Our confidence is in a God that's not limited by what is possible. God does the impossible. And that's why he's God. And can you imagine what our lives would be like? Can you imagine what our church would be like? What our families would be like if we had this audacious faith that Joshua had? Can you imagine how different our lives would be if we were like, you know what? God, you've got this. And God said, you know what? You're right. I do got this. Because I can do the impossible. I think we would be amazed at what God can do if we had this audacious faith. I love what God says to Joshua in that verse 9. He says, be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or discouraged, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. See, God is looking for heroes who are strong and courageous. But we're not talking about a strength or a courage that comes from within. We're talking about a confidence that we have in a strong God. A God who has the ability to instill within us that kind of courage. A God that gives us the ability to have a faith that is way beyond the conventional. A faith that blows out of the water any faith you've ever seen before. An audacious faith. And can you imagine what it would be like if you had that kind of a faith? And here's the real kicker. You don't even have to imagine that. Because God has given you that same faith. And I say it's time to activate it. I say it's time to not allow that audacious faith that God has given you to lay dormant in you. I say it's time to unleash it. And what can God do? You think of all the impossible circumstances in your life. Maybe the circumstance that you're facing right now, and it just looks hopeless and dark to you. But God says, I'm all about taking hopeless and dark situations and filling them with hope and filling them with light and doing the impossible where it doesn't seem possible. That's the kind of God that we live for. That's the kind of God that we serve. And I invite you this morning, I invite you into that kind of a life. And you know, maybe when you first heard about the series and you heard us stand up here and say, you can be a hero too, maybe in the back of your mind you're like, yeah, I don't think so. I mean, those guys, I mean, they had all kinds of things going for them that allowed them to be heroic. When the truth is, they have the same faith that we have. They serve the same God that we serve. We actually have more of the Bible than them. We have more of God's instruction. Our faith should be twice as audacious as the faith of Joshua. That's why I say that we have to activate that faith that God's given us. We can't live quiet, comfortable, hopeless lives when God has filled us with light and with hope and with this incredible faith. And God is just saying, I invite you. And just as he told the Israelites with Joshua at the helm, come on into the promised land. God is telling us the same thing. God's saying, it looks like a scary journey. Guess what? I'm going to be right there with you. Whatever circumstance you're facing, whatever situation is going on in your life right now, God is saying, you have the power, you have the ability to overcome. And it's not because you're strong and it's not because you're courageous, but it's because I, God who does the impossible, have given you the ability to face it. And so I encourage you. I encourage you with these words. I mean, this pep talk, I don't believe it was just exclusively Joshua's pep talk. I believe that the reason this was written down in God's word is so that you could open Joshua chapter 1 and you could read it and you could say, this message is for me. This is God's message for me today. I can live a life of audacious faith because I believe in the same God that gave this message to Joshua. And so I encourage you guys. I encourage you. And you know what? You read the book of Joshua. From the first part of the book of Joshua is all these heroic things that God is doing in the life of Joshua. And then the rest of the book, okay, there's 24 chapters in the book of Joshua. The rest of the book is the land being divided up. So it's like God gives them the land, boom, the rest of the book, they're just giving it away, handing it out, saying, here's God's promise fulfilled. Here's God's miracle that he did. Here's this family that's been restored. Here's your marriage we've been praying about, restored. That's what's waiting for us when we put our audacious faith in a God that does the impossible. Would you bow your heads with me? Father, this morning we sit here and having been presented with these truths from Joshua's life and with the message that you gave him, God, we realize that you are the same God that you were yesterday. You're that same God today. And so the promises that you give your people, the commands, the commissions that you give your people, God, are for us. And I would pray for each one of us in this room that we would no longer live lives of weak faith, that we would no longer live lives that are disguised by the things of the world, God, but instead we would live lives that are heroic, not because we are heroes, but because we serve a powerful God, that we can be strong and we can be courageous because we live for a God that does the impossible, that we don't need the world's legends or history or stories to tell us that a miracle happened because we know it's true because we know the God that performed those miracles.
You've been listening to a presentation of Remnant. For more information, visit us at remnantchurchonline.com.